WGNS, Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk. Stand by, Rutherford County. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
Good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. It is 29 degrees outside. Spring is right around the corner. Mitchell Motes with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service, talking lawns and gardens. And despite the fact that you're hearing forecast of winter weather coming in tonight, we're just a matter of weeks away, maybe a couple of weeks, from planting the cool season gardens. That's solar. This is a fun time of the year.
It is, Bart, and good morning. It's good to be here this morning.
Good to have you.
It's a bright, sunny day. On cool days like this, you don't worry about sweating too much when you work outside. So
that's
a plus.
And so get outside.
Oh, it's seasonal. I mean, it is winter. It's January, and it's supposed to be cold.
Yeah.
So it's good seasonal weather, but you're exactly right. February will mark the beginning of the 2013 vegetable gardening season with the planting dates for some of those cool season crops like onions and sugar peas and snap peas and some things like that. So if you can get your ground ready to plant in February, then you can sure start. So February, March is the time for a lot of those vegetables, and then we transition on into the warm season crops as the spring progresses.
And a lot of people who were smart enough to sign up are going to be learning how to do an even better job of gardening in 2 days.
Well, the Master Gardener class is, mm-hmm. It starts.
Saturday, I think.
No, that's the basic, the garden basics class.
Garden basics.
Yeah, the garden basics class. There's two
well,
classes
did,
being
well,
offered.
There are
two
the
multi-series
difference?
Classes.
Yeah.
The Master Gardener class is about 14 weeks long.
Okay.
It runs from January up into April. And then there is a shorter term class. It's called the Garden Basics class. The Garden Basics class is taught by and promoted by, conducted by the Master Gardener Association, those folks that have gone through the Master Gardener training program in previous years. And that association conducts the Garden Basics class. And it is... I think it's a 5-session class, meets over a period of 5 weeks on Saturdays. The first one is this Saturday, and it just covers the itinerary or the agenda changes every year. And I mean, there'll be some aspects of vegetable gardening, landscape gardening, etc. I'm not positive what the agenda is for this year as far as the topics to be covered, but they'll touch on a variety of things pertaining to gardening. Now, the Master Gardener class, it does require, well, both classes require advanced registration. The Master Gardener class is full. It's closed out. And they have begun, I think, on Tuesdays. They meet in the evenings, Tuesday evenings, through a 14-week period or so. And the Garden Basics class, you know, I'm not sure. There may be a couple of spaces left in that. So if anybody's interested, I would suggest that you call the Extension Service office. The phone number over there is 898-7710, and find out if there are any spots left. I was thinking that I heard one of the ladies say maybe Tuesday that maybe there were a couple of spots left, but I'm not positive about that. They could have filled up since then. So
this could be
sure.
A lucky day or an unlucky day.
Well, it could, yeah. In lots of ways, I suppose it could. That could be the case. But now there are other opportunities coming up. We've got this winter and springtime, you know, late winter, early spring is really a prime time for us in terms of our focused educational efforts. As a matter of fact, on February the 21st, We have a session. It's in the evening. It begins at 6 o'clock in the evening. Lawn weed identification and control. That'll be held out at the community center, and that's the building that houses the farmer's market. But that does not require any advance registration. There's no fee associated with it. Just if you're interested in that topic, you just show up. And again, that's on February the 21st. I think that's that is a weekday night. I forget which night of the week it is, but that is a weekday night. 6 o'clock out at the community center building there at Lane Agri Park. And the community center is the building that does house the farmer's market. And then on the 23rd of February, now that is a Saturday, so Saturday, February 23rd, we're having an event called a calibration clinic. And the calibration clinic is aimed at those folks that apply fertilizers and pesticides to their own lawns in their own home lawn care efforts, so that you can, or those folks can learn to calibrate those spreaders and sprayers to ensure an accurate application of product, and also to improve the product's efficacy, because you are putting out, if you put out the correct rate at the correct time, then you tend to improve the efficiency and just improve the overall effectiveness of the particular product, be it a fertilizer, be it a pesticide of some sort, whether it's a weed killer, etc. So we'll cover those things, how to do the calibration, how to calculate how much you need, for a given area. Again, that's on the Saturday, the 23rd of February. It starts at 8:30, and again, that'll be out at the community center also, or the farmer's market building. There's not a fee associated with that, but we do ask that folks call in and let us know if they intend to be there, simply to ensure that enough handout materials are prepared, because we'll have, some cheat sheets for you, some conversion factors, and some math things that will be useful if a person does go home and then decide to calibrate their equipment. And calibration is important because, it does a couple of things. Number one, it ensures you put the right amount of a given product out there. And putting the right amount out, that has a big influence on how effective it is. So it improves the results. And also it can save you money because you're not over-applying things, you're not wasting stuff, and, you're not adding things into the environment that you don't need to add. So those are all positive things, I think, that come out of that. So calibration is important. And, you need to calibrate. Label tells you on any given product that you need to put out X pounds of fertilizer per 1,000 square feet, or apply X ounces of product per 1,000 feet to kill weeds or whatever. So you need to do that. Otherwise, you're violating the label, and the results may or may not be as good as you want them to be.
A lot of folks have had problems with trees over the past year or so. Critters coming in and infesting those trees, killing the trees, eating them out, hollowing them out, things like that. Mm-hmm. And you're discovering that now as we're into the non-foliage time, and people are replanting, cutting down the old trees,
yeah,
and putting out some
dead
new
stuff.
Ones. Are we getting close to the end of the time when we can do that, or
no,
even
we're,
spring?
No, we're in a good time to do it. As long as the ground's not frozen, you can certainly plant those woody plants, any of the woody ornamental plants, be they trees or be they shrubs. As long as the ground's not frozen, mm-hmm. it's certainly a good time to do that. And, really it's a good time because, number one, it's physiologically the plants are in good condition to plant since they're not actually growing, but also the soil is in a good condition because we've got a good moisture level. It's easier to dig and to work in, and so on.
Now, is there any particular tree that would be hardier against insect infestation and things of that sort, so they can avoid this happening again?
Oh, I don't know that. There's not a bulletproof tree out there. Some have, compared to others, have relatively few problems associated with them. A hackberry tree doesn't have a lot of problems associated with it. Of course, that's not one a lot of people are going to choose to go out and plant. But yeah, you think about your just the hardwood deciduous trees that are native to Tennessee, and that's all your hickories and so many of the different oak trees, so many maple trees that are they have evolved over time under these conditions in this environment, and they're not bad choices, but they all have potential to be targeted by a given pest. From one year to the next, it can certainly happen. This thing, the emerald ash borer, this is an insect that has come into Tennessee in the last couple of years. It was discovered, I think, in 2010 for the first time. It's going to be a devastating insect. It's going to take a real toll on ash trees, and people can protect ash trees against that insect. They can use products that are out there right now. It doesn't take anything new, but it has to be done proactively. You've got to protect the tree prior to the insect attacking it. And individuals can do that in a landscape setting, in a home landscape, because, you know, they may have, a dozen or a half dozen or two or three or maybe one just real nice ash tree, and you want to protect that thing. Well, you can do it. You can go out and target that, and you can apply an insecticide very easily, very efficiently prior to being attacked. But when you think of a whole forest, then it becomes difficult to do that. And so that's why some of those pests are such a problem, simply because you cannot protect an entire forest. It's just not feasible to do that on a wide scale.
Now, but if you were to put some of this around an ash tree, do you put it around the drip line, or do you have to actually get it on the entire tree?
No, you can use a soil-applied insecticide product. Imidacloprid is the active ingredient. It's been around now for a number of years. It's been a real time saver. It's a very efficient tool to use because you apply it to the soil around the tree, and it comes either granular form or in a liquid form that you mix with water and pour it around the tree. So it's very easy. You don't have to apply it to the tree, to the above ground portion of the tree itself. Mm-hmm. It's picked up by the roots, and then because it is a systemic, it's translocated up through the tree so that it becomes, basically you're protecting the tree from the inside out. And when an insect feeds on it, then they're going to ingest some portion of that that insecticide, and it's going to help minimize those populations.
So are nurseries selling ash trees around here now?
To my knowledge, they're still selling ash trees.
Okay.
Yeah, you can still go and purchase an ash tree.
Think you might get a deal right now?
Someplace you can always get a deal. I don't know that necessarily that they're promoting ash trees, trying to clear their inventory out
before the borers get here.
Yeah, I'm not aware.
Where
of
are
that.
The borers over in?
Well, the emerald ash borer, the closest location that's been identified is in Smith County. So
that's pretty close.
Pretty close.
Yeah,
pretty close.
Is that Carthage?
Carthage would be the county seat there.
Okay, yeah, that's scary close.
It's close. Well, it's close. Yeah, I mean they're going to be here. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It would take some sort of divine intervention, I think, to for them not to ever appear in Rutherford County.
Well, if you went to a nursery and purchased an ash tree, how would you know it did not have an emerald ash borer already on it? Are they pretty noticeable? Is it obvious?
Yeah, you can certainly see the evidence, the symptoms of them. Well, number one is exit holes. In most all of these wood-boring insects go through a metamorphosis where they're in the larval stage, the egg, the larval stage, and then they the adult stage. And the adult stage is a beetle, so it's a critter, a six-legged insect that has antennae of some sort, and usually it has wings. They have the ability to fly. It's the larval stage, the worm stage, that does the damage on these. And it's when they're in that worm stage, when they're actually feeding on the sapwood, if you will, area of the tree, just underneath the bark, they basically destroy the circulatory tissue of the tree, and so the tree dies due to lack of poor circulation, because mm-hmm. they disrupted all that circulatory tissue. Well, at some point the thing's got to exit, to complete its life cycle. So you'll see exit holes, and they're kind of a D-shaped hole. Whereas a lot of them have little round holes and some have oblong holes, the emerald ash, and it's not a great big bug. The emerald ash borer has kind of a little D-shaped hole. So you'll see those if there's an infestation in there. So you just have to look for them.
So once you see that, there's nothing you can do.
If it's infested, you don't buy it.
Yeah. I mean,
you're looking at a nursery.
But
I need to destroy it. That'd be the best thing to do.
If it's growing in your yard, it's past the
probably
point.
it is because when there's a population large enough that's creating enough of these exit holes for you to notice them, it didn't just start yesterday. It's been going on for a while, so there's probably enough damage in there till it would certainly warrant I think consideration of removing that tree and disposing of it.
Now, do you have any brochures over at the Ag Center about trees and how large they grow and if they're good for shade or if they're good for something
else. There's a whole fact sheet series on Tennessee tree. Bart, I got to swap these headphones. These things are breaking up.
Are they breaking up on you?
Yeah, it's driving me crazy. Let me swap these right quick.
There we go.
But, we do have those publications. There's a fact sheet series that pertains to a lot of subject areas on trees, you know, trees for small spaces, trees mm-hmm. for good fall color, fall splendor, trees good for screens and hedges, things like that. And a lot of those things are available on our University of Tennessee Extension website. They're available as PDF files, so you can go to utextension.tennessee.edu and on the publication link and just access those. But we also have copies available at the Extension Service office, and we'd sure love to see you, so come by.
Let's go to the phones. Our number is 893-1450, 893-1450, and you're on WGNS with Mitchell Mote. How are you this morning?
Fine. How are you, Bart?
Doing great, thank you.
Hey, I got a question on tulip poplars. Ask him how come at the bottom of them, on a whole lot of them, you see the bottom look like they're rotting in there. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, that's a good question. You do see that a lot. And there can be a couple of or three or so different reasons or causes to that. And one is weed eaters. Will certainly cause those, if you get enough weed eater damage, allow that line to, and that'll happen to any tree, not just a tulip poplar tree. But when you allow that weed eater line to impact the tree bark, and you know, you damage that, and it'll cause wounds there. And it'll just, and the bark is the skin of the tree, so you create a wound in there, an opening, and it's an opening there for illness to move in the case of decay, fungi, and so on. But a very common thing is there is a little critter called a poplar tree beetle. I forget the exact name of it. Anyway, it attacks tulip poplar trees. It's a little boring insect, goes in down near the base of the tree. It'll be, if the tree has them, you'll see it probably in the bottom 3 feet or so of trunk, and very often it'll be down at the bottom. And where they cause that damage, you'll start to see the bark pull back and slough off and see some decay set up in there. And it could be a combination of, you know, physical damage from mowers and weed eaters and so on, or just along with the insect, or just the insect itself. Those are the two primary causes you see that kind of damage on these tulip poplars.
Okay. Could that be the bark beetle?
That's the ash bark beetle right there. And it...
We found something on Google.
Looking it up here. Mm-hmm. This is ash bark beetle. This is something that's been around a long time. It's a very small beetle. It's a little brown, not kind of nondescript. There's the Ipsen graver beetles, ambrosia beetles, little bark beetles. They're all kind of little brown colored small things. And when you say small, you know, you're talking like an eighth of an inch or so.
Oh, they are small.
Yeah, they're pretty small. And they've been around a long, long time. This emerald ash borer, it is a little bit larger than that, and it's a metallic green. It's pretty thin, if you like, as far as bugs are concerned. It's got a real bright metallic green color to it, a little bit larger than that, and it specifically attacks ash trees. Now, you know, like this thing's called an ash bark beetle, but if there were no bark, if there was a population of these things in a landscape and there were no ash trees available, I expect it could find something else to feed on. It's not strictly just an ash tree. Whereas the emerald ash borer, that tends to be its target, is just the ash tree. That has not been found up to this point to attack other species.
So is there something this person could do to sort of protect his tree?
On any of them, yeah, whether it's tulip pop, whatever. A good way to protect them against those boring insects is one use insecticide that we mentioned earlier, the imidacloprid type products. And various companies make make products that use imidacloprid. The imidacloprid is just an ingredient, and I'm saying imidacloprid starts with an I. and that's the active ingredient. Use those on an annual basis. It's one application per year. Generally, you do that in the spring, early spring, when new growth initiates, simply because you've got to have movement within the tree, sap movement in the tree, exchange between the roots and the canopy. So when you start to see a new growth come out in the spring of the year, that's a good time to make that application. And then when the things feed on it, then obviously they're going to ingest the insecticide, so that helps control them.
So you look at it April then?
Nah, probably looking at you know, late February, March.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it just depends on how the season goes, but probably in March would be the appropriate time for most of those species.
Our phone number is 893-1450. If you have a question or comment this morning, give us a call, 893-1450. We're going to check on the traffic and weather, and we'll be back and take more of your calls. 893-1450, Mitchell Motes with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service.
Now, more than ever, start your mornings with WGNS. The Action Line with Bart Walker, weekdays at 8:10. Truman Jones is on weekday mornings at 9 on WGNS.
New at Ford of Murfreesboro is the 2013 Ford Fusion Hybrid and Fusion Energy Plug-in Hybrid. The Fusion Energy has plug-in technology to further your charge, which means that you'll get amazing gas mileage. The new plug-in Fusion becomes America's most fuel-efficient sedan in 2013 with a rating of 108 miles per gallon in city driving. Visit fordofmurfreesboro.com at the intersection of Broad and Northfield.
Hi, this is David Lee, General Manager at Ford of Murfreesboro, and I invite you to come down and see our full selection of Fords, and we'll give you the best deal in town.
Hello, I'm Greg Tidwell from Bell Jewelers. We carry the full line of Tag Heuer watches, all at 15% off every day. Our in-house watch technicians will replace the batteries and pressure test all Tag watches for half the price of other stores in our area. Bring it into Bell Jewelers.
Bell Jewelers on Broad Street in Murfreesboro, across from Toots.
Hi, I'm Robert McConnell from Robert's Auto Repair. What's the difference between my car repair shop and some of the others here in town? We work hard with our customers and treat them like family.
Robert's Auto Repair, honest and fair, on Broad, across from Ford of Murfreesboro.
Good morning once again. Traffic easing in Murfreesboro as our commute begins to wind down a bit. We've got I-24 at 96, still pretty busy. Old Fort Parkway at Chaffin Place, Old Fort Parkway at Kaysen Lane, Broad at Church, Broad at Memorial, Rutherford Boulevard, and Mercury Boulevard, all still pretty busy for us this morning. Check out the brand new gorgeous affordable apartment community at Ridgemont Park in Smyrna, offering beautiful sparkling pool with large sun deck area, 1, 2, and 3 bedroom apartments. Call Ridgemont Park 462-6727. I'm Randy O'Brien with traffic on WGNS.
Thank you, Randy. What about that Murfreesboro weather? Brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
A winter weather advisory goes into effect for our listening area late tonight. We'll see sunny skies today with highs in the middle 30s, and we could see a mix of freezing rain, sleet, or snow tonight with a low of 27. I'm WGNS meteorologist Sam Dunaisty. Right now, it's 28.
This is Frieda Morgan at First National Bank of Murfreesboro. We offer checking that comes with a free check card, free mobile and internet banking, as well as free bill payer service. First National Bank of Murfreesboro, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Middle Tennessee football and basketball games are right here. This is Chip Walters on Rutherford County's Blue Raider Station, WGNS Murfreesboro.
Let's go Blue!
Hey, we're back again.
Wake me up before you go, go. Leave me hanging on the line.
That number to call is 893-1450, 893-1450. Mitchell Motes with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. We're talking about trees and shrubs and emerald ash borers, and who knows where the conversation might go.
It's
893-1450. Yeah, boy, I mean, you couldn't go much more exciting than
this. When you about reached the pinnacle, I guess, when you're having an in-depth conversation about the Ash Borers.
You better believe
the Emerald Ash Borers. Hey, a couple more classes I wanted to mention, Bart, before our time got away from us. Coming up for those folks that are certified and licensed pesticide applicators that do horticultural application, you know, mm-hmm. lawns and gardens and so on. Yeah, they are certified and licensed by the state of Tennessee. And as a part of their licensure and their certification, they're required to attain, you know, a given number of educational units in between certification periods in order to maintain or to recertify. And we've got an opportunity for those people on February the 12th. We've got a 5-point recertification class, that meaning they can earn 5 recertification points towards that on February the 12th, and that'll be at the Lane Agri Park office complex there at the extension office. And there is a registration fee and some associated with that. So if anybody needs details, they can call the extension office. But also, just for the everyday homeowner, we've got our annual Lawn Care 101 class that'll be on Saturday, March the 9th. And that's pretty much an all-day event. It's going to cover, the principles of home lawn care, including turf grass characteristics, the growth requirements, establishment methods, seeding, sodding, etc. Primary maintenance practices, renovation, pest control, things like that. There is a registration. Pre-registration is required on that one because we do have a lot of handout materials to get ready. And it is an all-day event, so a meal will be included in that. And there is a $10 registration fee. And finally, on the 16th of March, which is also a Saturday, it's a practical vegetable gardening class. And that's just a one, kind of a one-shot thing. It runs for about 4 hours, 8:30 to 12:30. On that Saturday, and it'll cover the basics for a new gardener. And this is aimed at those people who are inexperienced or new to vegetable gardening, and they're looking to get started in that. And it's going to cover, I think, the primary information they'll need to help their first attempt or their first few attempts at growing a vegetable garden to be a little bit more successful. Mm-hmm. And there is a pre-registration on that one also. But for all of these things, you can call the Extension Service office at 898-7710 during office hours and get some more details. You can also check out our county website, utextension.tennessee.edu/Rutherford. And we've got a calendar of events there also. Oh,
okay. Let me ask you this, because more and more people are living in apartments and yep. condominiums, yes. things like that, zero property line homes. I saw something about taking those packing flats, I don't know what you call them, the things that you put under a forklift and lifted up pallet.
Oh, pallet.
Yeah. Somebody had taken those and had stood it upright where it was vertical mm-hmm. and put, peat moss or something inside it that would hold the plant, and they were planting certain types of vegetables on an upper level, and then moved down about halfway and put something else in there. Have you heard anything like that before?
Well, I haven't seen that per se, using
they had
pallets,
this out on the deck
yeah,
of their apartment.
Yeah, maybe out on
a
balcony or a little courtyard area, something
real
like
small
that.
Area. Mm-hmm.
Small space. It's just another take on container gardening is what it probably amounts to, giving folks an option, just another way to grow some vegetable plants in those small spaces. It's just another form of container gardening. They would be growing those more shallow-rooted, kinds of plants that don't require a lot of, support. Lettuces are a great example of things like that. Green crops, cold crops, where you're eating the leaves, they tend to lend themselves to that pretty well. Deep-rooted crop, carrots, for example. You need some soil depth in order mm-hmm. to grow a good mm-hmm. carrot, or to grow sweet corn. Well, you've got to have some depth for this thing to anchor in. Plus, you've got to have room, vertical height for the thing
corn's
to grow up there.
Corn's
pretty big. And there's, some plants that have been developed for those smaller spaces, patio tomatoes, for example. It's a tomato, but it's just a smaller plant. It doesn't get as large. So it's better suited for a container that might fit, in someone's backyard patio at a small home or an apartment, something like that.
Let's go back to the phones. 893-1450 is our number. 893-1450. And you're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
Mitchell, I'd like to know what kind of grass seed would have grass really green this time of the year. It's a house on Battleground Drive between Dawson and Elliott, and it's as green as it can be. And this past summer, it wasn't quite as green as it is now, but it was still green.
Mm-hmm. Well, a good turf-type tall fescue, if it's healthy, it's going to be just super green right now.
It's a house. I don't know if somebody did it or what, because it's real level.
Yes, sir.
In the house. I mean, it's tremendous looking. I never seen anything like it. And another question.
Okay.
The block of grass, you know, where you cut it out.
Yeah,
the plug. Ground, uh-huh. Where would the person get some of that at?
You talking about by the sod?
Yeah, right.
Well, a good source, there's the sod company in Eagleville, Tennessee.
At Eagleville?
Yes, sir, Southeastern Sod. They're located, or Southeastern Turf, I think.
Very expensive or what? I was going to try to find some and do it myself.
It's sold by the pallet. And I'm thinking that they square cut a pallet of sod, and it's just going to depend on what kind of grass it is that you want, because I think they grow both the cool season grass like tall fescue as well as Bermuda grass sod and so on.
What I was needing it for, I've got a wooden fence and it's kind of on a slope, and mm-hmm. when it rains quite a bit, I mean, it washes the dirt, and I can't keep any grass.
Right.
There, because it don't get all that much sun.
Well, it's going to be tough without a lot of sun to keep any grass there, whether you sod it or put that sod down. Yeah, I mean, because it's...
Yeah, I found that out.
It's going to... without enough sunlight, it's going to be tough to grow. But the sod, you know, that's a way to get instant cover. In a pallet of sod, you know, weighs somewhere like a bit of a ton. It's cover about 500 square feet, you know, give or take. You might even think about maybe some alternatives to grass itself if you don't get very much sunlight. Some ground covers.
I'll tell you what, I'll come out there. Are you around the office there quite a bit?
Yeah, a lot of the time, yes, sir.
Yeah, I may try to run out there this morning or something.
Okay.
And talk to you. Don't y'all have some grass out there that's sold in certain sections?
I do. Uh-huh. I do.
Yeah, that's my... Okay, thank you a lot.
All right, you're very welcome.
Good luck to you. You know, we had a similar situation when we moved into where we're living right now. Mm-hmm. It's almost 30 years ago. We don't move a lot.
Time goes by, doesn't it?
But we just didn't have any grass in the front yard, and it was on sort of a moderate hill, so to speak.
A little slope.
Couldn't get anything to grow there. We planted seeds. We tilled it. We played with that for 2 years. And I don't remember exactly what we paid, but we, you know, you spend a lot of money getting grass seed and putting it down, all that stuff. Finally, somebody said, get the sod. Mm-hmm. And we put that down. I don't recall what it cost, a little bit more than grass seed.
It'd be more expensive than seed.
But we instantly solved the problem.
You did.
And have not had the problem since. It stuck and stayed.
And sod comes with a root system of sorts. It's albeit it's a short one because it has been cut. Mm-hmm. But it is a mature plant. It does have an established root system. So it has some advantages over grass seed, but the primary... you know, drawback, I guess, is expense when you compare it to seeding. It is,
but if you
know,
compare it to 2 years,
but how many times can you seed and then you know, sod once and maybe seed 4 or 5 times? Only you're probably coming out cheaper to put the sod down. So yeah,
if we had just known earlier,
that's right. Sometimes you know you have to spend a little money to come out ahead.
You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. Good morning. How are you today?
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, I've overdone it on my turnip patch this year, and I was wondering if I feed the turnips to the hogs. I don't know if anything will hurt a hog, but I wanted to be sure.
No,
it won't hurt them.
It won't hurt a cow, as long as they don't choke on it. You know, if they'll chew it up and not choke on it, they'll be fine.
But well, no, I had a friend, one of his cows swallowed an apple whole, and... he could breathe in, but it couldn't breathe out, so mm-hmm. you'd know where that went.
Right, so. Right. But they can, actually, you know, there are some who will sow turnips in the fall of the year to provide some grazing for livestock, for cattle and whatnot. And they will root the turnips up out of the ground, you know, take the nose and so on and roll those things out, and they'll eat those. But no, it's not going to hurt your hogs.
All right, thanks.
Yes, sir.
Let's take another call here. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
Good morning.
Hi.
What is the best dirt to use for container gardening?
What about that?
The best
The best.
Well, I think it's going to be a combination of some mineral soil, which is, you know, the native ground. You know, you dig it up out of the ground. Well, that's native mineral soil. It's fine to use the bagged soils, the prepared soils, those things that are labeled as garden soil. Keep in mind that they don't have a lot of, well, they're not really soil, okay, per se, like what you're going to dig out of the ground. They're real high in organic matter. They tend to drain pretty well. And they also have a tendency, because they do have a fair amount of organic matter, that when they get wet, they'll hold water in there pretty good too. So I've seen some problems when folks had used just pure bag soil or manufactured soil mixes in a vegetable garden bed, okay, a raised bed, that they would get those new transplants. They'd set them out in the spring of the year or the early summer, and it'd get real wet in there, and it could have what's called damping off, and it'd be a fungal disease that attacks because of that real super moist soil. It'll attack the little stem of the plant just right at soil line almost, and just sort of girdle the plant, and it begins real weak, and the tops will fall over. But that soil is fine to use that. Just be aware that you do need to that it does have a tendency to hold some water, but it will drain pretty good too, because it does have organic matter. It's kind of like a thermos. Organic, you know, a thermos will keep things hot, it'll keep things cold. Well, organic matter helps things drain, it also helps things hold water too. So it's kind of neat in that regard. But now, if you wanted to, to use native soil, you could do that. You just want to mend it pretty good. A pretty decent way to do it is take some of your native soil and then say add some organic matter like compost to it, mm-hmm. and then also maybe some sand to add some coarse material to it, you know, like a third by volume of each of those, and just mix it really well. That makes a pretty good growing medium.
A third sand, a third native soil, and a third compost.
Okay. That works pretty good because you do have that raised bed, and you do want it to be able to drain, and you do want it to stay loose, and so our soil have a tendency to be a little bit on the fine textured side, you know, because of the clay content. So the sand and the organic matter in there are going to help separate those clay particles and, you know, provide some physical separation between them to improve that drainage. And that's just going to help root development, so on in there. You can use other materials. It doesn't have to be compost per se. I mean, it can be decomposed leaves, manures, well decomposed or aged livestock manures, cow manure, horse manure. You know, it's compost. It is original, mm-hmm. naturally composted. Maybe nothing you've done to it to encourage it. It just happens over time, and compost happens. You can make a shirt like this. It's compost, yeah. Happens, I guess. But you put it in a pile long enough, and it's going to compost. It's going to decompose. We tend to, when we compost, we kind of manage that and try to encourage it along a little bit, make it happen faster. But just a mixture of native soil and organic materials or other coarse material things like sand to help improve that drainage. Now, you can also, buy prepared soils that are a mixture of native soil that's been screened, okay, it's been passed through a sieve that takes out, rock fragments and large, root segments and so on, and it may have some compost already blended with it. You buy it by the pickup truck load. There are commercially manufactured compost materials. There's a company or a family down in Giles County, Tennessee, the Rawlings family. They sell a product called R-Grow, and it's a composted chicken litter comes off their farm. You can buy it in bags. You can buy it by the truckload. I mean, that's a good amendment to that native soil to help improve it. And that's the case whether you're putting it in a raised bed or if you just what I just call flat ground garden, you know, just mm-hmm. traditional garden spot. It's good to add that organic material to it.
When you're buying these bags of soil, yep. and you're wanting it to be used in a garden here, mm-hmm. raised bed or whatever, if you look at where it is from, is that what would give you a clue as to this is native soil of?
No, it, I mean, it's not. When I refer to native soil, I'm talking about what comes out of the ground.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's not native soil. I mean, it's not soil.
Would it be native if it's from New England somewhere? Is it soil from up there? Is that what they're doing?
It's you know, mostly it's pieces of tree and so on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not a...
It's mulch.
It's not soil. It's a composted, blended material of, you know, tree parts and so on. But a lot of bark in it, maybe some fines, but it's not Mother Earth. It's not dirt. Okay.
So we need to do something to... You need to add something. Usually,
if you're
going to
put it in a raised bed especially, mm-hmm. You want to do that just to make it a little bit lighter. It's not going to compact on you. But just the addition, you know, it's always good to add organic matter to your existing garden spot if you're talking about a traditional garden spot. Well, if you could have 5% organic matter in there, it'd be great. Now, naturally, we're going to have 1%, 2%. And if you don't keep adding organic matter, it is incorporated into the soil because, okay, it's kind of a paradox. The organic matter promotes populations of things like earthworms,
mm-hmm.
okay,
mm-hmm.
and also good bacteria and so on. Well, what do those things feed on? They feed on organic matter, okay? Well, you build up the layer of organic matter, and then you just stop and leave it alone. Well, these things are consuming organic matter. So after a while, it's gone. You know, the organic matter level has been reduced because you encourage this big population of earthworms and good bacteria. Well, they've eaten all the groceries, and so their population start dropping off again. So you got to, you know, it's an ongoing process. You keep adding to it. And because of where we live in the Southeast, we have weather conditions that are conducive to, you know, bacterial activity for many months out of the year. And so our organic matter tends to degrade a little faster than it does in places where you don't have as long a growing season because, you know, the biological activity period, the biologically active period in the soil is not as long in other places where you have, you know, shorter growing season than it is here.
You hear about Native Americans putting in fish in the soil. What does that do? Or does
Well, sure it does because, you know, everything is made up of stuff. Okay, nutrients, elements, okay. And there, as far as plants are concerned, there's about 19 essential nutrients or elements that they need. Well, okay, those living organisms, that's, you know, organic means it came from, you know, carbon-based, but it was living, all right, at some mm-hmm. point. Well, it has some quantity of all those things in there. And so basically it's a fertilizer, it's a natural fertilizer.
Okay.
You know, fish oil or fish oil meal, that's a natural fertilizer. It's where it's mm-hmm. the fish has been, I don't know what the process is, you know, I don't know. If you want to make your own, I can't tell you how to do that. If you want to go catch a lot of, if you want to go sucker grappling and get a big mess of suckers from the creek or from Stone River or whatnot, I suppose you can do it, but I can't tell you how to do it. I don't know the process. But anyway, they'll process those fish remnants, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. Just it's the refuse, the throwaway, I guess, after the fish have been processed, and they take it to another process and create, you know, the fish oil meal, and it's a natural fertilizer. It's not a super high concentrated form of fertilizer where it has, you know, real high nitrogen content, etc. But it's a natural slow release because the bacteria and other organisms in the soil, when they feed on that, they release those nutrients to make them become plant available. So, but that's what they were doing. They were just adding the fish in there as fertilizer to, you know, give it a boost, give that seed a boost when it germinates and starts to grow. Then this little dead fish in there is decomposing over time, and it's slow to release in the nutrients.
So throw in a fish for good measure.
That is a way to do it. Yeah, it is.
We'll be right back. We're going to check on the weather. Stay with us. Mitchell Mote from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. you have something to buy, sell, or trade, call me. Weekday mornings at 7:50 for Swap and Shop.
WGNS, AM, FM, and online.
This is Tina Fox at the Co-op Farm and Home Center. We have a wide selection of the Watkins products. We have the Watkins vanilla flavoring. We have a lot of your other flavorings like lemon, peppermint. This is Tina at the Co-op Farm and Home Center. We have everything those farmers will need. We have everything from fencing to chicken coops to wire to gloves to do those outside activities, anything the farmer would need. The Co-op Farm and Home Center is at 985 Middleton Sea Boulevard, just off of South Church.
WeatherEye.
A winter weather advisory goes into effect for our listening area late tonight. We'll see sunny skies today with highs in the middle 30s, and we could see a mix of freezing rain, sleet, or snow tonight with a low of 27. I'm WGNS meteorologist Sandra Nystee. Right now, it's 28.
For decades, we've been telling you that Bell Furniture has first quality name brand furniture half price every day. Now this locally owned family business has pictures of some of their furniture on the internet at www.bellfurnitureonline.com. Save with Perry Bell at Bell Furniture, 1517 the New Nashville Highway, halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna. And on the internet at www.bellfurnitureonline.com.
The cell phones keep changing. This is Melanie Davenport at Sprint by Cellular Concepts. We've got great Android devices. We've got picture mails now and texting. Sprint's come out with an unlimited data plan, $79.99. I call it all you can eat, all the internet, all the texting, and it's free mobile to mobile to any cell phone in the country, so you're not using minutes. $79. Call us at 893-CELL-2355. Sprint by Cellular Concepts.
We're WGNS, FM 100.5, FM 101.9, and AM 1450. Worldwide at WGNSradio.com.
Welcome back. Only a few minutes left, so if you have a question, dial real fast. 893-1450, Mitchell Moat. The fish man. The garden man.
I think somebody already has that title on Swap and Shop. Fish man. Right. Yeah. Well, fish man. I don't want to try to take his title from him, but we come up with something else, I guess.
893-1450 if you have a question or a comment. Once again, what are those dates of those activities?
February 21 is long-awaited identification and control. That's in the evening, 6 p.m. And then on February 23rd is a calibration clinic. That's a Saturday, 8:30 in the morning, start time. March the 9th is Lawn Care 101. That's all day. That's a Saturday. Begins at 8:30. And on March 16th, practical vegetable gardening. That's about a half day, about a four-hour event, all out at the community center. And then on February the 12th, we've got a commercial hort applicator recertification class. Most of the day on February the 12th.
And you need to sign up for those?
For a couple of those, you really do need to, simply just to ensure that there's enough stuff there for everybody, as far as reference materials and so on, that'll be prepared.
Now, that all-day event that you have dealing with the gardens and lawns and what have you, is that the one where you have displays of the latest gadgets and gizmos and in addition to the talk, some of the dealers?
No, we don't have any dealers or anything like that.
Okay, that's on into the spring, I guess.
This is pretty much, you may be referring to something that the Master Gardeners have had before, their gardening extravaganza,
where they would have educational talks
as well as vendors on display and so on. So, yeah, that's a function or an event that has been promoted by the Master Gardener Association.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't know that they've got one slated for 2013 or not. I have to check and see.
Okay. Well, just be watching for that. But in the meantime, we're just a matter of weeks away.
Oh, we are. You know, it's if you're thinking about doing some spring vegetable gardening, onions, snap peas, English peas, lettuces, things like that, you need to be getting your stuff ready. It's not too late to build raised beds. If you want to do that, you can build the beds and fill it up with bag soil or a manufactured soil of some kind, or amend your own native ground to make it a little better suitable for growing things in those beds. You know, tree work, if you've got trees that need pruning, trimming back, if you've got limbs that are in the way, you got dead limbs, now's the time to do it. The leaves are off, you can see limb structure pretty good. And they're not as heavy, you know. A limb full of leaves is pretty doggone heavy compared to one that's not. And it may still be heavy, but it's not as heavy as it would have been full of green leaves. So that's, you know, that's a plus also.
And if you were noticing a lot of dead limbs falling
falling, get up there and clean those out and you know, cut the dead stuff back. And if it's a job too big for you, there are a number of professional individuals out there that are in the tree care business. You know, look for those certified arborists if you want some measure of quality, or check what kind of reputation they have, Better Business Bureau, if they have any complaints against them, and, you know, references from friends and neighbors and so on. But there are a lot of good professional people out there.
Yeah, checking the Better Business Bureau is a good way to, on their website, gobbb.org.
Yeah, that's easy to do. And then there's the International Society of Arborists, ISA.org, I think is their website. And you can do a zip code finder deal, and they will it'll print you off a list of you know, arborists within, you know, 50 miles or 25 miles, etc., of your zip code. So that's a good way to find out individuals as well.
Mitchell Moat with us today from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. Mitchell, thanks for joining us.
Bart, thank you so very much.
Tomorrow at this time, our Rutherford County delegation, state senators, state representatives, they'll be telling us about that first month of the General Assembly and some of the things that are going on.